And as we continue to arrive here, may we immerse in the sound of the neigh for a few moments. The sound of love surrounds us. And in the words of the Mirudere, O oneness, you are the endless rolling sea. Again, it is you who is seen among the many waves. Though you have given yourself 1,000 names, 100,000 forms, whatever is said, the sky, the stars, the spirit of the body, is you, only you. Even if the eye of man looks with intense attention at the universe, the sky, the blue vault, the sun, the world above or this earth and lowly soil, even if he looks at the face of Adam with the telescope of knowledge, it is you, only you. In hyacinth and basil, or in thistle, in the heart-rending roar of the lion, or the sweet voice of the nightingale, in the bud that lends joy, or the fragrance of the rose that uplifts the spirit, in the most lifeless particle, in the least of the animals, it is you, only you. In all my senses, in heart, intellect, and conscience, when I am drunk and bewildered with the desire of love, And in the pain of the moments when I'm separated from my beloved, in my uncertain soul that burns with longing, it is you, only you. In my embrace, when the moon-faced beauty trembles, when in a moment infinity unfolds, when enraptured I behold the snowy sky, in fear of grandeur, when my soul is bewildered, it is never anything but you, only you. Evalahu. Who, this sound, this word is referred to as the pronoun of divine presence, genderless, beyond description. And we'll come again to this who as we move through our time together, and with the breath, return to that. I'd like to thank Kazur for joining us. I know he has needed elsewhere. Thank you. Hair. And please do signal if for some reason my voice drops, just so I can see some of you over there. Trying to adapt our space so that we can speak together for a little bit to begin with, and then also, God willing, have some time of movement together a little later. The nay is such a wonderful metaphor for the human being. And it was wonderful to discover how a nay is made. One has to look for just the right reed that's had enough sun and enough rain so that the segments have formed in appropriate places. And then the nay is harvested. And to open the nay maker pierces the nay with a red hot iron. That fire goes through the center of the nay. And then the holes are opened so that the different notes will be able to be sounded. And as some of you probably know, Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi began his masterwork, the Masnavi, with this remembrance of the nay, the call of the nay. Listen to the reed and the tale it tells. How it sings of that separation, and that ever since they've cut me from the reed bed, been longing for that return, and that this is the state of the human being, and longing to share the intensity of love with each other. This friendship between Mevlana and Shams was such a beautiful friendship that we continue to catch the fragrance of it and be inspired by it. And I'd like to share just some of their words to be in their presence a bit as we begin today. Shams in his Makalat, the conversations of Shams were recorded as he was speaking in different situations, and sometimes the shifts of personage are a bit mysterious in the way that things were written down, but you'll catch the sense of his meaning and his presence. In one moment he says, "The heart is greater, more expansive, more pleasant, and more illumined than the heavens. Why would one narrow it with unnecessary words? How could it be appropriate to constrict such a pleasant universe into a prison for oneself? What is the purpose of turning a universe that is like a fruitful garden into a tight prison, wasting time with delusions and difficult imaginings, throwing oneself into a dark universe where one sleeps in ignorance all the time, wrapped in a cocoon like a silkworm? We are of those who turn the prison into a fruitful garden. If our prison turns into a fruitful garden, imagine what our fruitful garden might become. Just watch and see." None of the gracious words of the Prophet Muhammad have surprised me, but only one hadith, one saying, has bewildered me: that the world is the prison of the believer. I don't see the world as a prison at all. Where is the prison, I'm asking? But that Blessed One had said, "the prison of the believers." He didn't say, "the prison of the servants." The servants are a different community. As Llewellyn was speaking this morning, that quality of servanthood and of carrying the light into this world opens such a space, and so often there is this metaphor of the rose garden. Later we'll speak a bit more about the whirling ceremony that is shared in our tradition. But as one gets to know some of the aspects that are symbols for this process of transformation, one finds out that even the clothing, and in all traditions, has its own symbology. And for the dervish who is dressed in this long white robe, it has a short jacket. The short jacket is called a dastagul, which means a bouquet of roses. So that when the dervish is whirling, little by little, a little bit of the jacket opens slightly, and there is that sense of the dervish becoming that rose blooming, and the fragrance of roses being shared, that fragrance of the beloved. And Shams, in speaking about this path of Muhammad that then opened in so many ways, reminds us that so much of the intensity of the way of the Prophet was of a deep contemplation and a deep prayer. And that he so much wanted for everyone in his community to be able to immerse and open into that experience of the divine, but he knew that there were many levels among the people in his community, and that it was this gift of the salah of the prayers and of the fasting. We happen to be now in the month of Ramadan. For those who may be observing it, it's such a time of intensification of prayer and emptying, opening receptivity, that these practices were a way that he could invite everyone in the community to experience something of that deeper contemplation and come to know that in their own lives. He tells a story of someone who was on his way to prayer, and breathless, he arrived late at the time of prayer and said, oh, has the salah, the prayer, already been completed? And they said, yes. And he just sighed, oh. And someone among them said, oh, I'll give you all the salahs I've ever done in my whole life for that one sigh. There was such a sincerity and longing there with that man. Shem says, look and see what a sign this is. It's the friend who says it. He tells us, hasn't it been said by the Prophet, La ilaha illallah, that is, there is no God but God, this statement of the unity, is my fortress. Whoever takes refuge in my fortress becomes secure. Whoever goes into this fortress of oneness, the Prophet didn't say, whoever only says the name of the fortress. Saying the name is easy. You say, I've entered the fortress, or I went to Damascus. But if it were just a matter of the tongue, in an instant you could ascend from earth to the heavens, or to the Empyrean and the throne. Blessed Muhammad said, the faithful one who says, La ilaha illallah, La ilaha illallah, with purity and from the heart, goes to paradise. Now you sit and say, he is one. But who are you? You're more than 6,000. Become one. Otherwise, is his oneness your concern? You're 100,000 particles, and each particle is being carried off by some desire. Within each particle of yours, you're carrying an illusion. The one who demonstrates purity of intention and sincerity of action goes to paradise. There's no need for a promise, such as if he or she has been able to do this or that, he or she goes to paradise. For if he or she has been able to do this, he or she is completely paradise itself. There is a saying, truly, in the remembrance of God, hearts find rest. Let's take another moment and just pause together. And be with the breath. Opening to the breath that moves in and out, allowing the body to relax into being here. Breathing out, la-ilaha. Breathing in, illa-la, silently within. Might we join our voices together in a hu together? If one goes to visit the tomb of Jalaluddin Rumi, as one enters, one sees over the doorway this calligraphy of the hu, and it's a double hu, hu, hu. And there is a sense of the human being being that mirroring for the divine, receiving and being in this realm, that mirror of all of the divine qualities. As one journeys on this path, one learns ways of being together in respect for each other, in respect for all of manifestation. Life in the Tekke was based on that sense of respect and honoring of each other, of each soul. As one would even come to a threshold, it's a moment of remembrance, a remembrance of moving from one world to the next. One pauses before the threshold and steps over. And actually the word for threshold is the same as darvish in the Farsi, the word for dervish. So there is the sense of the dervish also being that one who stands at the threshold between the two worlds, and the heart being that meeting place. When one would enter the Mevlevi Tekes, service would begin with work in the kitchen. And service was much a part of life for those in the Dervish Lodge. We're much more spread out in our day and age. It's seldom that we have that closeness of shared work together in such a way. But even then, it was for a limited period of time. One would devote oneself and dive into what was called the chile, or the ordeal. There was such a sense of the cooking of the human being. And one finds this metaphor so often. There's the beautiful story in Mevlana's Masnavi of the chickpea in the pot, and boiling away and trying to rise to the top, and the cook is standing there hitting it over the head with the spoon, and the chickpea is saying, "But why? You know, why are you hitting me like this? Oh, you know, pushing me back in." And the cook says, "Well, this is out of love, that you might go further in and become more flavorful. That time of ripening in the garden with the moisture of the rain was for the sake of this fire, that you might become better nourishment." The one who was the head cook in the tekke was the one who shared the training of the souls. Mevlana has a beautiful passage where he says, "The fire that iron or gold needs, would it be good for fresh quinces and apples? The apple and quince are just slightly raw. Unlike iron, they need only a gentle heat. But gentle flames are not enough for iron. It eagerly draws to itself the fiery dragon's breath. That iron is the dervish who bears hardship. Under the hammer and fire, he happily glows red." Always, whatever comes, one opens to offer it. There's the saying, Ash Golson, may it be love, may it become love. There was a cook in the time of Mevlana, we call Atesh Baz, the one who plays with fire. And one day he was cooking a meal, and he realized that he was running out of fuel. And he very much wanted the meal to be ready when Mevlana returned from a journey. And he was moved to quickly put his foot into the fire to keep it burning. And then he noticed that the fire was continuing to burn, but his foot wasn't being burned. And in that moment, his left toe was singed. But then the meal was able to be cooked, and Mevlana returned. And when Atesh Baz rose to greet Mevlana, he stood and when he bowed, put his foot over that toe, covering that moment of doubt. And ever since then, everyone in our tradition, and often in other traditions as well, find this same posture in remembrance for that moment of humanly doubt, but then standing again in humility and honoring. That is the way that the dervish begins the ceremony. When one stands to begin the whirling ceremony, one also stands in that position, covering the toe, and standing with arms crossed. And there is that sense of, in the Arabic alphabet, it begins with the letter Aleph, which is this straight line. So there is the sense of that oneness, that unity, that the human being becomes when we surrender, when we give up our own doing and open to the being done through of the divine. So the days are filled with service, even as we have the opportunity in our own lives now to open to each day, to ask, how is it that this person might be able to be useful? Open to that passage, that flowing through. And in the practice of the Mevlevis and also in some of the other orders, there's a beautiful prayer that it felt would be lovely to share with you, and it really echoes some of what Llewellyn was speaking about earlier today, about light and opening to that light and allowing that flow and sharing of light. It's a prayer that was recited by the Prophet Muhammad that then Mevlana would recite each morning after his morning prayer. And since then, all of those who have followed in that way have opened to this prayer. O God, grant me light in my heart, light in my grave, light in front of me, light behind me, light to my right, light to my left, light above me, light below me, light in my ears, light in my eyes, light on my skin, light in my hair, light within my flesh, light in my blood, light in my bones. O God, increase my light everywhere. O God, grant me light in my heart, light on my tongue, light in my eyes, light in my ears, light to my right, light to my left, light above me, light below me, light in front of me, light behind me, and light within myself. Increase my light. Mevlana too says to be like an eye, to feed on the light, to let that light be our nourishment. So we might pause for a moment if there were any questions at this point, and then I'd like to share a bit more about the whirling and then invite us to share some movement together in a little bit. maybe we'll just continue. We're gifted with meanings. And ways of sharing moments together. Many paths towards the one. And in our own tradition, it's been wonderful to share in this process of Sema, which can be an individual practice and also shared within a community. There is an understanding of the journey of the soul that one is called to return, you know, that we're born from this purity and move into this existence, and with the sometimes the weightiness of existence, veils are drawn around us. And little by little, we may hear something that calls us to awaken, to return, to be aware, to wake up. And this is sometimes referred to as the repentant self, the one that turns again, the tauba, the word is the turning back towards one's Lord. In the stages that are described, the nafsi lawama. In the ceremony of Sema, it begins with a knot, the sound of the neigh also that we heard in the beginning of our time together here, as though the breath of creation is being blown, and then begins with a wonderful procession in remembrance of this unfolding of creation through the mineral, vegetable, animal. And also in remembrance of that search of the soul. And then the moment of opening comes when the dervish rises and stands as a human being, removes that dark cloak, those veils are folded behind. And one stands in the white robe and begins to move, to whirl. And the Sema hall is actually divided by an invisible line. That is that threshold between the two worlds. And in a few moments, I'd like to invite us to stand and share some of that procession together in meditation. As the ceremony then unfolds from that procession into the whirl, there are four patterns of whirling, and there is the sense of this movement, of this journey of the soul into closeness with one's creator, into that sense of union through these passages of whirling. And there comes a moment where in the third salam, where the music really shifts, and there is that sense of unity, an intensification of that. But then it moves again into the moment where the sheikh will actually move into the center, and the sense of servanthood moving back unfolds from that. then the recitation of the Quran begins. And usually it is this verse: to God belongs the East and the West, and wherever you turn, there is the face of God. There's another beautiful passage in Mevlana's Masnavi where he says, "Oh my God, our intoxicated eyes have blurred our vision. Our burdens have become heavy. Forgive us. You are hidden, and yet from east to west, you have filled the world with your radiance. Your light is more magnificent than sunrise or sunset. And you are the inmost ground of consciousness, revealing the secrets we hold. You are an explosive force, causing our dammed up rivers to burst forth. You whose essence is hidden, while your gifts are manifest. You are like water and we are like millstones. You are like wind and we are like dust. The wind is hidden, while the dust is plainly seen. You are the invisible spring, and we are your lush garden." So I'd like to invite us to all stand, and maybe just stand for a moment just in place, just rise, being aware of the breath. I have a question. If I detach from this and try and speak loudly while we move, will that be picked up sufficiently?
Billalong.
Spirit causes the hand to close and open. You are intelligent. We are your voice. Your intelligence causes this tongue to speak. You are joy. For we are the result of the blessing of your joy. All our movement is really a continual profession of faith, bearing witness to your eternal power. Just as the powerful turning of a millstone professes faith in the river's existence, dust settles upon my head and upon my metaphors, for you are beyond anything you can ever think or say. And yet this servant